Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Hoo-wah! The Frontlines of Freedom team really appreciate joining us this fine day in America. We are and should be proud Americans. Here's what we have for you this hour. We're going to start by discussing a move in D.C. that might affect veterans' rights to own firearms. And Navy vet Teresa Robinson will introduce us to another female veteran. It's a pleasure to welcome Ben Sanderson to the show. Ben works in our nation's capital on behalf of Gun Owners of America, and there's a lot to talk about what's going on there. Welcome, Ben. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Danny. It's great to be on the show. Yeah, there's a bunch of interesting topics we've got going on revolving the Second Amendment. There's big ones that affect all Americans, and then there's also some very specific veteran ones.
Okay. Start by telling us how and why you got involved with Gun Owners of America. I'm guessing you grew up with guns, or tell us the story.
It's actually a funny story. My parents are not exactly the most pro-gun. I picked it up really from my grandfather taking me out, doing some skeet shooting and some sporting clays. But really what changed my mind is the second I turned 18 and we went through a rough period in the country. And I realized I needed to be self-reliant on myself for my own defense. And that really just spiraled into me becoming a federal lobbyist for Gun Owners of America and protecting all Americans' rights to do the exact same thing.
Did that, I presume that included you owning a firearm?
Yes, it did.
Okay. What's your position with GOA now?
My current position is a federal affairs liaison. That means I'm a federal lobbyist for Gun Owners of America. But I also run our YouTube show, The Minuteman Moment, which is on our YouTube channel.
Okay. Take us to D.C. Take us to what's going on. What is, in your opinion, the really critical things we need to know about what's going on there?
So there's two issues right now. The biggest issue would be the new engage in the business rule that the Biden ATF has just recently put out. Fortunately for us and all of GOA members, we recently received a temporary restraining order against the rule. What this means is that the ATF is not allowed to enforce this new rule change at all. It's really great that we have this temporary restraining order because essentially what it does is prevent the ATF from enforcing their universal background check rule, in which almost all private sales would be illegal at this point.
Wow. That's crazy. So that means if you owned a gun and I wanted to buy it, it would be illegal? How would I get the gun? Or would there be any way at all to legally buy from you?
So it wouldn't be legal for us to exchange it privately. What they really want to do is create a paper trail for all of these transactions. What they want to do is force you to go to a gun store or an FFL and fill out the firearms transaction record or the 4473. What this does is it gets them a paper record with all of your information, your address, your date of birth, your name, and it also would help them build a record of how many guns you own and exactly where they're kept. So that is the ATF's illegal registry, which GOA uncovered about a few years ago. And the saying is registration leads to confiscation. And that's exactly why we're fighting so hard against not only this rule, but any attempts to make universal background checks. And we're also pushing for the destruction of the nearly a billion records that the ATF currently has.
Okay. Wow. What else you got?
So the second big issue, and this is directly related to veterans' gun rights, would be the Department of Veteran Affairs fiduciary rule. Essentially what this is back in the 2000s during the Clinton era, the Department of Veteran Affairs decided that any veteran that received financial help and through a financial advisor, so a fiduciary, with their benefits, was declared to be mentally incompetent and therefore would not be allowed to own firearms at all.
This is only veterans?
This is only veterans. And that's what makes it so much more unfair is it's treating veterans as second-class citizens because I can go out and I can go get a financial advisor to help me manage my expenses, my income, etc. However, if a veteran does that same thing for their benefits they've gotten through the VA, they would no longer be allowed to own firearms because the VA would consider them on the same level as someone who has been institutionalized.
Whoa. Wow. Am I glad you're out there looking for... We veterans should be outraged by that. Thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah. So Fortunately, last year in the funding bill, we in both the House and the Senate, we were able to pass a provision that prevented the VA from doing this anymore. And President Biden was forced to sign it in order to keep the government running. At the same time, this would expire on September 30th. So that's why we're pushing not only for this inclusion, but we're also pushing to make it permanent and also retroactive.
Wow, yes, indeed. Gosh, okay. I'm afraid to ask you what else is going on. I'm sure not liking what you've said so far. Go ahead, Ben.
Well, actually, the veteran fiduciary rule, defeating it last year, has been the culmination of almost 30 years of effort from Gun Owners of America. We opposed it originally in the beginning, and we've been pushing ever since to protect veteran gun rights because this is a huge miscarriage of justice to consider veterans, like I said, as second-class citizens, and also to deny anyone their rights simply because they have a financial advisor.
Yeah, I know a couple of financial advisors. They're pretty good guys. They're not like they're terrorists or anything like that. But having one suggest incompetence if you're a veteran,
A
is it?
100%. That is exactly what the Department of Veteran Affairs has said. And interestingly enough, the anti-gun Democrats in the House, there was 138 of them that signed a letter saying the VA should ignore what the president signed into law and instead use funding from last year to continue this program, as well as explore different options for red flagging veterans, which is when a complaint comes in and the police come or a third party comes to take away their guns because they believe you're a danger to yourself or others. It's extremely unconstitutional. There's no due process in that. So to say and to recommend to the Department of Veteran Affairs that they go into veterans' houses and take their guns is unbelievable and extremely unconstitutional.
Well, they'd have trouble getting in my house. I wouldn't let them in. But
100%.
that's a different tangent. Ben, it sounds like we citizens, and particularly we veterans, should be really glad the Gun Owners of America is having you doing what you're doing, because there's got to be somebody fighting for us.
100%. Well, we fight for everyone's gun rights. It's not just looking at the huge picture. We delve into these smaller, focused issues as well. And one of our biggest things is we have a lot of veterans in the organization. But on top of that, when we talked about this issue on the YouTube show and on our social media, we had a lot of veterans comment about how they've had this exact same thing happen to them, how they had their guns taken away simply for having that financial advisor. So we were able to build a really strong coalition around this issue and push it onto the president's desk and force him to sign it.
Wow. I'd like to amend that law to say that applies to all congressmen, senators, and their staff. Well, whatever. Ben, we're getting close to running out of time. How can listeners get involved with GOA and keep track with what's going on in D.C.?
Well, the best thing to do is to sign up for our email alerts. It's 100% free. It's not spam. It's able to target not only your state and local areas, but also on the national level for big fights that GOA is taking. Additionally, if you want up-to-the-minute updates, it'd be best to follow our social media, which you can find at Gun Owners on X, or you can look up Gun Owners of America on Instagram or Facebook. And if you want more in-depth breakdowns of exactly the fights we're taking, you can look up our YouTube channel, which is Gun Owners America. We have my show, which is the Minuteman Moment. We have One in the Chamber, which is more on focus on the activism side, as well as a brand new show called Law and Ammo, which is going to be looking at our legal fights.
And let me tell you, I am a member of GOA. I have been for quite a while, and this is why. And I didn't even know what Ben was doing. I just was supporting all the other things they were doing. Ben, thank you. Thank you for your excellent report. Thank you for what you're doing to protect our constitutional rights. I appreciate you, brother.
Well, thank you very much, Danny. It's great to be on the show.
This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. It's time to do some deep knee bends, troops. Go halfway down, do 40. This while thinking patriotic thoughts. I'll be right back. Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to vetted veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code.
There's no doubt veterans sacrifice and service to this country. For decades now, troops have been sent around the globe to fight, putting their lives on the line, but with no clear U.S. interest to protect.
To honor that sacrifice, Concerned Veterans for America is working to end our nation's endless wars. As veterans ourselves, we know a better foreign policy can make our troops and our country safer.
Learn more about how you can help by visiting cvafrontlines.com. That's cvafrontlines.com.
Silver has increased 24% over the past 15 months and is a solid financial investment. Silver is projected to continue its rise and is nowhere near its 2011 high of $49 an ounce. So there's still a lot of room for investment growth. Call 800-UCB-GOLD or go to their website at universalcoin.com/Denny. That's universalcoin.com/Denny. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thanks for joining us today on Frontlines of Freedom. It's a delight to have co-host Roland Ashby back on to discuss young eagles. Roland is a retired Coast Guard chief warrant officer, but he never flew for the Coast Guard. But he did learn to fly while he was serving and now owns and flies, even built an airplane. And he helps youngsters who think they want to learn to fly to learn about flying. So thanks for being willing to share about this, Roland.
Oh, happy to do it, Colonel.
You know, when and how did you get interested in flying?
Well, you know, it just so happens I was on active duty. I got recalled to active duty and deployed over to the Middle East with the Coast Guard. And within 2 weeks of actually being over in the Middle East, they asked me to come back to Virginia and run the overall program for our Coast Guard members who were working with the Army over in Iraq and Afghanistan. So here I was deployed, family's not with me. I'm in Virginia by myself, and it just turned out that one of the guys I was working with was a flight instructor. So he kind of talked me into starting. You know, he even put me in the car and drove me over to the Air Force base and said, here's where you can learn to fly. So it was one of those accidental things that I always wanted to do, and all of a sudden had the time and the ability.
Well, it certainly caught you. I mean, if ever I've known a guy who really likes every aspect of flying, it's you. So, you got bit. Okay. One of the things our nation needs and is forever going to need is good pilots. Young Eagles is about encouraging kids that are thinking about that to do that, isn't it?
Well, Colonel, on the surface, the Young Eagles program does look like it's specific to try to get kids more interested in piloting, becoming a pilot, those kinds of things, career in aviation. But it truly is more of a idea of getting kids more involved just in STEM in general. It's not just for pilots. So, you know, the idea behind this is get people interested in airplanes, get people interested in aviation. We need mechanics. We need people who want to design and build airplanes. We need manufacturing. And of course, we need pilots. And, you know, in this current stage of our country and our world, we need drone pilots. I mean, there are more drone pilots, I think, nowadays in the military than there are actual aircraft pilots. And that all comes into play.
That's a really good point. Because every aspect of flying doesn't mean necessarily being a pilot or even a crew member. As you pointed out, mechanics and designers and builders and drones and all that stuff, that's all part of getting in the air, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, there's a lot of great different associations, organizations around our country that support and encourage aviation. So, you know, when I first became a pilot, I got involved with the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association, which was, you know, a great organization that, you know, really tried to help people with medical issues and that kind of stuff to be able to fly. But as I got more and more involved, I found this organization called the Experimental Aircraft Association, or what we all call EAA. And again, this is one of those on the surface things. That's an organization for people who want to build airplanes in their garage and then go fly these airplanes that they build. The reality behind that is that that organization is way wider than just home-built type airplanes. They have a group that does nothing but vintage aircraft. When, you know, those are aircraft that are, you know, older than like 1978. But Warbirds of America And all of these old, you know, Korean War, Vietnam War, World War One, World War II aircraft, and how they're continually owned in the civilian world and maintained and flown and trying to bring back that history, is also part of EAA. And they created this program about 30 years ago called Young Eagles. And to date, now 30 years they've been doing this, they have flown nearly 2.4 million kids all around the world, but primarily in the United States and in Canada. And it's an opportunity for kids between the ages of 8 and 17 to go fly in a general aviation airplane. And that can be an airplane like I have, which is a seaplane, or it could be a Learjet, it could be a helicopter, or it could be an airplane that somebody actually built in their garage that has two seats, and I'll take them up flying. So it's a really unique and wonderful program.
And this is nationwide, or even beyond nationwide, including in Canada, right?
It is. Yep. We have flown in every state in the United States, every province in Canada, and over 90 other countries that have seen kids flown. And, you know, what's really interesting about it is there's about 50,000 volunteer pilots that have flown kids on their own dime in their own airplanes, paying for their own fuel. I mean, the pilots don't get reimbursed for anything. This is about the love of aviation and trying to introduce this to more people and more kids. And it's not just 50,000 pilots. There's over 40,000 other people that have helped out on the ground, whether it's doing registrations, guiding kids to the airplanes, talking about airplanes, but not necessarily pilots. So it's a big group and a big effort over the last 30 years.
That sounds absolutely magnificent. I mean, one, it's not surprising that that exists, but frankly, except if I didn't know you, I wouldn't know about it. On the other hand, I'm not into aviation that much, but just the fact that kids can get oriented, it doesn't mean they're going to like it or not like it or do it or not do it, but they can get oriented at a time in life when they're looking at their future. That's fantastic.
It is. It's amazing because I had a kid that came up to me, a 16-year-old, was going to an aviation-themed high school and really wanted to become a pilot. In fact, he wanted to join the military and then go fly for the airlines. And we took him flying, and I actually took him flying about three or four different times. And after the fourth time, he looked at me and said, you know, I don't know if I really want to be a pilot anymore. And of course, I was horrified because I'm like, oh, Romney's, what did I do? How did I scare this poor kid? And he looked at me straight in the face and says, I think I'm smarter than that. I want to learn how to design them instead. God bless you, son.
He's all part of the family, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it truly is. It doesn't necessarily mean it has to be about aviation, but, you know, we need to get our kids involved in all of the different potential STEM aspects of things. And somebody becomes an engineer because they had an opportunity to go fly in an airplane and got inspired. Boy, I think that's really what this is all about. And it's exciting. I actually have flown a kid back when I was in Virginia still in this program, who today is a first officer for American Airlines. So we've seen them going from everywhere, from somebody just getting their pilot's license to people who want to become professional aviators.
That's truly cool. When you and I were together this past weekend, you were running or involved in a program of Young Eagles. A number of pilots flew a lot of kids that afternoon and morning, didn't they?
We did. We ended up having 9 volunteer pilots in aircraft, flew over 120 kids on Saturday morning. And, you know, what to give kind of a flair of what that feels like, when a pilot brings kids, we usually will bring 2 or 3 kids on a flight. So that way we get more people, more of that flying experiences. And, you know, and it starts off by doing kind of an abbreviated pre-flight of the airplane. So we'll walk the kids around the airplane. We'll talk about the different aspects of how the airplane works, what we're looking for on the airplane before we get in and go fly. And then we'll give them a safety brief, just like you would on an airline. You know, here's how your seatbelt works. Here's when we're talking. Here's what I'm doing. Ask me questions, you know, because obviously we want to have a safe flight. And then from there, we'll get up. We'll even let the kids follow along on the controls. You know, hey, let's show you what a banking looks like. Notice when I turn the yoke, look out on the wing, what happens there? And, you know, so it's all about teaching and getting kids comfortable. What we don't do, we're not doing inverted flights. We're not doing rolls and barrel rolls and loops. And because the goal, again, is it's to keep kids interested and in excited about aviation, not try to scare them.
Makes sense to me. Final question. How can listeners learn more about Young Eagle? How can they plug in somehow?
Great question. Well, so first of all, if you have a child between the years of 8 and 17 years old, you can go out and just go out and do a search, you know, Google search Young Eagles or EAA Young Eagles. There's a website out there called yeday.org, which is youngeaglesday.org. They list all of the different rallies and events. But on that same page, even if there's not a rally or event, you can find a local Young Eagles coordinator, and they'll help connect you with a pilot and get your child up flying, even if it's not during one of these rallies like we did this last weekend. Yeah, it's like I said, most of us, we just love taking people flying. It gives us a reason to go fly.
Uh-huh. Well, thank you, Roland. Thanks for sharing about Young Eagles. And thanks for what you're doing to help the next generation of people get interested in aviation. And thanks for being my friend and co-host.
Absolutely, Colonel.
Coming up next on Frontlines of Freedom, Teresa Robinson will introduce us to another female veteran, and we'll open our weekly mailbag. Troops, I hope you're giving serious thought to buying gold and silver to keep your future more secure. Check out Universal Coin. That's where I go. Check universalcoin.com/Denny. That's universalcoin.com/Denny. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for one-arm push-ups. Just do a dozen with each arm, twice. Then take a break and stay in the area. I'll be right back.
HelpVet.net is here to help all veterans, active military, and families. HelpVet.net is a national help center helping the military community with their everyday needs. Whether you need a realtor, an attorney, discounted services, or information on retirement benefits, financial resources, and much more, our vast network of hand-picked qualified service providers are waiting to help you. With up-to-date military news and resources, you can find answers to all your needs at HelpVet.net. HelpVet.net. Never forget, never forgotten.
Do you have a story inside you yearning to come out? As a self-published author, you are free to creatively distribute your book online or using your own professional connections. White Feather Press will publish your manuscript and set up online distribution, allowing the author to retain all copyright and distribution rights as well as all profits. Check out White Feather Press at publishyourdream.com. White Feather Press, reaffirming faith in God, family, and country.
Welcome back to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Troops, I really do welcome your comments and questions. Contact me through frontlinesoffreedom.com or comment on Facebook. It's a real pleasure to welcome back to the show our newest team member, Navy vet Teresa Robinson. Teresa introduces us to female veterans. Welcome aboard, Teresa.
Thank you so much, Denny. I am thrilled to be here today. I am a United States Navy veteran. I served in 1974 to 76 at NAS Miramar. The F-124, we have the F-14 Tomcats. Today, we are here with another awesome female that is going to have the opportunity to have her voice heard. So often, female veterans go unrecognized in America's history. And because of you, we've had the opportunity now to interview female veterans and educate the general public. We did serve. Today, we have Ina Golden with us. Welcome, Ina.
Thank you, Teresa.
Ina, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, what branch you were in, maybe when you served, where you served, what your job was, and why you joined the military?
Okay, sure. I'd be glad to do that. So I joined the Navy in 1973. Background was Dad had died in 1968. I was the oldest of three children. And our family was very poor. I did well in school, and I really wanted to go to college. My dad wanted me to as well. And so I worked weekends and after school, and I was in college prep classes and then did co-op in the afternoon just to get money to go to school. But after 2 years, the money ran out and the grants ran out. And so I talked to my high school counselor and said, "What should I do?" And she said, "Have you ever considered the military?" I said, "No, I really hadn't." And she said, "Well, there is such a thing as the GI Bill. And for putting in so much time in the Navy, then you can get out and you can use that for college." Well, Grandpa had been in the Navy in World War I and Uncle in Korea. And so I immediately went to the Navy recruiter, took a test, and they said, you did so well. Come back tomorrow and take another test. And Danny, you may remember the GCT-ARI. Probably not, though, because you went right on to a service academy. But those were the two tests that we take. I think it's called the SBAB now.
Yes.
Anyway, I scored well again. And then was told that if I graduated top of my boot camp company, that they would send me to school to the NENIP program, which is for enlisted people who did well, that they could go on and get a nursing degree. And that was really what I wanted to do, was to become a registered nurse. And so I did graduate top of my boot camp company, and I was an educational petty officer. I was also felt very humbled to be given the award of honor woman as well. And this is in early 1973. And so then I asked to go to the NENIP program, and I was told, you know, when you go to your next duty station, and I had a guaranteed A school for hospital corps in Great Lakes, if you graduate near the top of your class, then you can go to the NENIP program. And I did. And again, I was an educational petty officer and asked about the program. And they said, no, you need to go on to your duty station and then ask the career officer there. And so I did. And I gave all of these promises that I was given and said, this is what I'd like to do. And the chief petty officer behind the desk said, I will not recommend that you go on to the NENIP program. I will not put your name in for that. And I said, can I ask why? And he said, yes, you are a female and you're going to get married and have a baby and the Navy will not get its use out of you.
Oh.
So anyway, I felt pretty bad about that, but I still wanted to be a nurse. And years later, I did become one. But I was a hospital corpsman at the subbase New London, Connecticut, and started out in newborn nursery and then was assigned labor and delivery. And you'll find this kind of interesting. And the reason why, and I was the only female in labor and delivery, was because if an officer's wife was coming in to have a baby, she did not want to have a male enlisted man in the delivery room, but it was okay to have a female enlisted person. And so I was on duty for the officer's wives. Plus, I also worked my shift work there too. Enjoyed that a lot. And then after a year, was sent to La Maddalena, Sardinia, Italy, an isolated island off the coast of an isolated island in the Mediterranean, to serve for the women and children whose husbands were on a submarine tender, the Howard W. Gilmore, which served the fast attack nuclear powered submarines in the Med that year. And then after that year, returned to Great Lakes and did a little bit of administration and then was discharged. So a lot of things that happened in the Navy, a lot of really good things. I met a sailor at Great Lake, no, at the submarine base. The odds were pretty good. And then we were married 7 months later. And unfortunately, he passed away 3 months ago, and we almost made it to 50 years.
I'm so sorry, Ina, to hear of that.
Thank you, Teresa. There were some really great experiences of living in Sardinia. We lived, well, he was on the ship, and then I had a house off base. We didn't have really a base, just two buildings. And we were about a mile from where we needed to go for him to catch his ferry over to the ship and for me to go to the dispensary. So everything was by bicycle. There were no radio, no TV, no English-speaking people for around, and then all of our transportation was by bicycle. It was fantastic.
Ina, did you ever notice that you've given us a rich, rich history, and I can tell from what you said that possibly you were not treated as equal to your male counterparts, obviously in the education that everybody said you were going to get and you didn't get. Were there any other parts of your military service where you were not treated equally, and were you able to do anything about it if there was?
Well, let me just tell you a couple of things that how different females were greater than 50 years ago. And Teresa, you can attest to a little bit of this. So in 1973, a girdle was part of our uniform. We also had to wear red lipstick. And if they could not see our red lipstick, we were gigged. And then our high heels and gloves were part of the uniform as well. Also, during inspection, we had to smile. And if you weren't smiling, you were gigged as well. And too many gigs and you had demerit detail. See, women were not allowed when I went to my first duty station. And there were very few waves at the submarine base. But we were not allowed in the EM club, which was the enlisted men's club. We were not allowed on ships. It was considered bad luck. Overseas, there were transport vessels to go to where the ship was. And that's where the commissary was, where we could buy food. But female military were not allowed to go on the regular time so that a ship went over there. We could only go when the dependents' times were there and we could go.
The things you speak of are all too familiar to me.
I bet they are.
Are you glad that you joined?
So glad, so glad. You know, and it has permeated every bit of my 72 years. And I'm so happy that I did join the Navy. What I did find is that I think in all military people do this, we have high expectations of ourselves and others. And we're sometimes disappointed when others don't meet our expectations. But anyway, I'm living up north now in northern Michigan in a log home on the Muskegon River. Love it up here. And I help the Amish midwife deliver babies, something that I did over 50 years ago. But now it is so different to do it in a baby house or in someone's home without electricity.
And Denny, I know that we're pressed for time. I do want to take a moment and thank you, Denny, for allowing us this segment to showcase female veterans who are often forgotten. And I want to also mention June 12th is Women's Veterans Day. And maybe possibly we could have Ina on again to talk about that.
Indeed. And that is coming up soon. And that's in Michigan. And if people from other states want to learn about how to have their own Women's Veterans Day, who can they contact?
They can contact you. You can get a hold of me.
Denny at frontlinesoffreedom.com. Thank you, Teresa, for taking time to join us today. I appreciate you. And thank you, Ina. I appreciate your service and your story.
Thank you, Denny.
Thank you, Denny.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Next up, it's time for our weekly mailbag. Then it's military history time. You reported for duty to Frontlines of Freedom. Stand tall, troops. Let's do some more push-ups. How about 64 this time? I want you Ranger ready. Then stand at ease. When considering precious metals investments, credibility is paramount. That's why I chose Universal Coin and Bullion. They have a long-standing reputation in the industry that instills confidence in investors. Plus, the company's president, Dr. Mike Fulgens, is recognized as America's gold expert by his peers and the U.S. government, and was named Dealer of the Year by the American Numismatic Association. Call 800-UCB-GOLD or go to their website at universalcoin.com/Denny.
Friends, Adam here, Patriot Foods, U.S.-only company. Frozen fruits and vegetables straight from our dirt, not overseas. Support the U.S. farmer. When you shop at patriotfoods.com, we give back to a military family in need. We got to take care of each other, my friends. We have to. So important. 10% off patriotfoods.com. 10% off promo code FREEDOM and shop today.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. This is the final formation for this week on Frontlines of Freedom. I do some coin collecting. Universal Coin was the dealer of the year for the American Numismatics Association. It's a great place to go for coins and a great place to go to purchase silver and gold. I encourage you to go to universalcoin.com/Denny. That's universalcoin.com/Denny. Okay, team, it's mailbag time. I welcome comments from you, our listeners. Do send your thoughts to me at Denny at frontlinesoffreedom.com or on Facebook. Skip, what's the first comment?
Well, Colonel, Peter and Mary, parents of two Air Force members, send you a happy birthday, Colonel. They really enjoy the show.
Thank you, Peter and Mary. I appreciate your encouragement and your support as I'm getting older, or old, whatever.
And Kim, a former Air Force pilot, said he just heard that Russia was considering ending the war with Ukraine. You think that'll happen?
Kim, as we discussed during the news, I hope it does, but in a more fair way than Russia is proposing. Okay, now it's time for military history. What's first, Skip?
Well, Colonel, on 14 June 1775, Congress adopted the American Continental Army. This procedure and the desire for secrecy account for the sparseness of the official journal entries for the day. The record indicates only that Congress undertook to raise 10 companies of riflemen, approved an enlistment form for them, and appointed a committee to draft rules and regulations for the government of the Army. This is our Army's birthday.
So hoo-wah to all us Army guys. On the 11th of June, 1776, the Continental Congress selected Thomas Jefferson, John Adams, Benjamin Franklin, Roger Sherman, and Robert Livingston to draft a Declaration of Independence. Knowing Jefferson's prowess with a pen, Adams urged him to author the first draft, which was then carefully reviewed by Adams and Franklin before being given to Congress for review. The document began with, "When in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and nature's God entitle them, a decent respect for the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights. Among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." Some members of Congress could not approve the original language condemning slavery as a cruel war against human nature itself. This would have to wait for another century and another war before their right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness would be also recognized.
You know, Colonel, one of the founders I'd love to meet would be Thomas Jefferson. You know, he was just such an awesome writer.
Indeed. He articulates truth really well.
And on 14 June 1777, during the Revolutionary War, the Continental Congress adopted a resolution stating that the flag of the United States be 13 alternate stripes, red and white, and that the Union be 13 stars, white in a blue field, representing a new constellation. The national flag, which became known as the Stars and Stripes, was based on the Grand Union flag, a banner carried by the Continental Army in 1776 that also consisted of 13 red and white stripes. Legend says Philadelphia seamstress Betsy Ross designed the new canton for the Stars and Stripes, which consisted of a circle of 13 stars and a blue background, at the request of George Washington. This may be true. With the entrance of new states into the U.S. after independence, new stripes and stars were added to represent them. In 1818, Congress enacted a law that the 13 original stripes be restored and that only stars be added to represent new states. June 14th is now celebrated as Flag Day.
So June 14th is both Flag Day and the Army's birthday. On 12 June 1862, during the Civil War, Confederate General J.E.B. Stuart began his ride around the Army of the Potomac during the Peninsular Campaign in Virginia. 4 days later, Stuart had circled the entire Yankee force and provided General Lee with crucial information. General George McClellan had spent the spring of 1862 preparing for the Union Army for a campaign against Richmond, and on May 31st, Robert E. Lee assumed command of the Army of Northern Virginia. In the next month, Lee showed the gambling spirit that eventually earned him a reputation as one of history's greatest generals. Stuart rode 100 miles around the Union Army, pursued by Union cavalry that was commanded, coincidentally, by Stuart's father-in-law, Philip St. George Cook. The Confederate cavalry was then far superior to their Yankee counterparts. The information provided to Lee helped the Confederates begin the attack that eventually drove McClellan away.
And on 13 June 1944, during World War II, Germany launched 10 of its new V-1 rockets against Britain from a position near the Channel coast. They proved to be less than devastating. Mired in the planning stages for a year, the V-1 was a pilotless, jet-propelled plane that flew by air-driven gyroscope and magnetic compass, capable of unleashing a ton of cruise missile explosives. Unfortunately for the Germans, the detonation process was rather clumsy and imprecise, depending on the impact of the plane, as the engine quit and the craft crash-landed. They often missed their targets, thankfully.
And on 10 June 1965, during the Vietnam War, some 1,500 Viet Cong started a mortar attack on the district capital of Dong Xai, about 60 miles northeast of Saigon, and quickly overran the town's military headquarters and an adjoining military compound. Other forces raided a U.S. Special Forces camp a mile away. Our helicopters flew in South Vietnamese reinforcements, but the Viet Cong cut down the troops. Heavy U.S. airstrikes eventually helped drive off the enemy, but not before the South Vietnamese had suffered about 800 casualties. We had 7 killed, 12 missing and presumed dead, and 15 wounded. The Viet Cong were estimated to have lost 350 in the ground combat and perhaps several hundred more in air attacks. Two Americans later received the Medal of Honor for their actions during this battle. And that's military history for today. And now it's time for our self-defense report. Take us there, bro.
All of us here at Frontlines of Freedom believe strongly in your right to keep and bear arms for protection of yourself and your family. All across the country, violent crime is skyrocketing, and now, more than ever, Americans need to stand up and exercise their Second Amendment rights. Now is the time to get trained and ready to handle this growing threat. But if you're not, please look into it and learn what you can do to legally carry a firearm to protect the ones you love. What's the story this week, Colonel?
Well, an Army veteran in a wheelchair was attacked by an 18-year-old across the street from the Metro headquarters in downtown Houston, according to police. The 18-year-old suspect ran up to his wheelchair and tried to take his backpack. The Army vet had a handgun and put up a fight the suspect likely never saw coming. He fired multiple shots, striking the suspect. The suspect ran several hundred yards where he collapsed and was picked up by the Houston Fire Department and treated. Police said the would-be robber had multiple gunshot wounds. He was taken to a hospital in serious but stable condition and is expected to survive.
Thanks, Colonel. I get students confined to wheelchairs in my class on a regular basis, and it does my heart good to see them. After all, they are among the most targeted in our society, along with women and the elderly. I did some background search, and this man visited the VA regularly because he had a heart condition, COPD, diabetes, and a few other physical problems. In fact, this man had just begun carrying a gun for protection because his wheelchair had been tipped over and his backpack stolen just 2 weeks prior to this second attempted robbery. Just a few weeks ago, I had a young man in a wheelchair at one of my classes. The last shooting drill of the day, we induced stress by raising their heart rate. When this man rolled up in a wheelchair, rather than give him a pass, I told him to race around the table for a minute until he started to get tired, then launch into the shooting drill. He was able to complete the drill, putting good shots on target. Here's the way I look at it. The most important part of a warrior is his heart. We call that a warrior mindset, and that's the baseline of personal defense. The heart of the warrior is what gives us the willingness and courage to fight back, and without that, we are all defenseless victims. This Army vet had no legs, but I'm here to tell you that when it comes to mortal combat, that legs are secondary to the heart. In fact, warrior mindset is most important to those confined to a wheelchair simply because they don't have the option of running. Those confined to wheelchairs have only two options, fight or comply. This Houston Army vet chose to fight, and Frontlines of Freedom salutes his superior courage and stout heart as he bested this young criminal. We wish this Houston vet all the best, but we also hope and pray that the young criminal who was shot takes this lesson to heart and turns from his life of crime.
Well said, Skip. Our movie of the month is The Elevator. You can go to the Frontlines of Freedom website, go to the blog and get the link and watch it for free. I'd appreciate getting your comments on the movie. Send your comments to me at denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com. Next week on Frontlines of Freedom, General Jeff Merrill will discuss the Army's birthday, Flag Day, and the National Guard. And Air Force Colonel Kim Carpenter will share her story of her time in combat as a pilot. And Gil and Skip will present The Border and a Book. Our book, Frontlines of Freedom, with 19 authors, has the mission of helping all patriotic Americans step up and help our nation return to our traditional values of serving, not being served, of being in shape physically, mentally, and morally, of being proud of our nation. And now it's available in Spanish. You can purchase that book on frontlinesoffreedom.com or on Amazon. Please help us get this call-to-action book into the hands of all Americans. And do get active in correcting our nation. Plug into Concerned Veterans for America. Go to cvafrontlines.com. That's cvafrontlines.com.
Thank you, friends, for joining us for Frontlines of Freedom today and every week on this great station. Please check us out on Facebook and add your comments. And if you missed any part of this show, hey, all our shows are available on demand at frontlinesoffreedom.com. We especially thank our military listeners for serving our country with honor and dignity and for keeping us all safe. God bless you and your families as you serve.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thank you, listeners all across America, for joining us in the foxholes on the front lines of freedom. Stand tall, be proud Americans, and join me next week for military and veteran information you will not get anywhere else on the front lines of freedom. Dismissed.